against
the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
Well, because he's an outsider. He's not them. He's not part of the club. He's uncontrollable. He hasn't been through the initiation rites. He didn't belong to the secret society.
It is a big idea. A new world order.
After 1989, President Bush said, and it was a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order.
It's the end of World War II. For the last 70 years, we've had a new world order. And that is now under severe stress.
It's the same pattern everywhere. It's divided in four basic stages. Demoralization, destabilization, crisis, normalization.
You've been demoralized. The dictatorship of relativism, no objective truth, no transcendent purpose. You've been destabilized. The private Federal Reserve system of usury, the unelected global bureaucratic governing bodies, the permanent administrative state, the deep state, the long marching through the institutions. All we need now is a crisis. Are you even aware what a crisis is or how a crisis works? Because crisis is something that creates chaos.
Human action resounds in the heavens. The bell echoes above. What we decide here today will polish or crack the firmament. What shall it be?
That Antifa, the Democratic Socialists, and other treasonous groups are fomenting, it's important to see their Zelenskyite tactics for what they are. In Saul Alinsky's handbook for the coming uprising of the left, titled Rules for Radicals, we can clearly see how Zelensky's rules are being applied. Rule number one, power is not what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have.
Well, let's be clear that Antifa are not calling on the government to censor anyone. In fact, that they resist the notion of turning to the government or turning to the police, who we've seen have been infiltrated by white supremacists, who have been sympathetic to the court, sort of return to law and order notion of fascism. And so the idea is, the real enemies of free speech are fascists. We've seen that historically.
Number two, never go outside the expertise of your people.
What about when an Antifa member stabbed a police horse in the neck with a knife? Was the horse a racist Trump supporter?
Yes. So the horse...
I didn't know horses could vote.
You see, the horse is a tool of the police, and the police, under the Trump administration, have been increasingly intolerant, militarized.
Number three, whenever possible, go outside the expertise of the enemy.
No, but you are an easy person to dislike.
I mean, no, I'm an easy person to target by fascists. That's why this organization called Far Left Watch is going through my tweets, finding tweets from 3 weeks back, and I don't know if you've gone through my Twitter.
Number four, make the enemy live up to its own book of rules. Number five, ridicule is man's most potent weapon.
As someone who has cops in my family, I'm offended by that. Because the people I know who are cops, they have kids.
Are they immortal?
Number six, a good tactic is one your people enjoy. They'll keep doing it without urging and come back to do more.
My dear friends,
USA, no Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA.
Number seven, a tactic that drags on too long becomes a drag. Don't become old news. Number 8, keep the pressure on, never let up.
As blood is actually reflected in Las Vegas's rising sun, she decides to manipulate the pain, the anger, and direct it toward lawful gun owners. She tweets, imagine the deaths if the shooter had a silencer, which the NRA wants to make easier. Hillary, there's a reason you lost the election. As Americans come together, you seek to divide, not sympathize, not empathize, showing just how hollow a tin man you are.
Number 9, the threat is usually more terrifying than the thing itself. Number 10, the major premise for tactics is the development of operations that will maintain a constant pressure upon the opposition. Number 11, if you push a negative hard enough, it will push through and become a positive. Violence from the other side can win the public to your side because the public sympathizes with the underdog.
For every, you know, few minutes, somebody gets killed and certain percentage are black. Yeah, and 9 out of 10 blacks are being killed by blacks. And these Soros-handled groups, their answer is ban guns. I always hear that. You know, the NRA is the new Klan because black people are getting shot in areas where they've banned the guns. 9 out of 10 blacks that are shot in this country, look it up, are shot by other black people.
Number 12, the price of a successful attack is a constructive alternative. Never let the enemy score points because you're caught without a solution to the problem. Number 13, pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it.
White people, not me, because you know what, out there, in the premises of the university, I deal with microaggressions on the daily, as do other people of color. And you have people out there wearing hats like those, y'all don't say about it.
Because
how about
I have a right
that?
To.
Make America great again, really? Lynchings, mass genocide, mass deportation, constant killings? And y'all are just gonna shut the up?
In order to counteract Saul Alinsky's treasonous rules for radicals, I'll add my own personal rule for patriots. Once you see the enemy for what they truly are, they become what they truly are. John Baum, reporting for Infowars.com.
Lest we forget at least an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement of the very first radical who rebelled against the establishment and did it so effectively that he at least won his own kingdom. Lucifer.
That's when I realized both sides were nexus. Nothing more than toy soldiers in a sandbox. They may live longer than old Nexus, but life doesn't mean living. I am for living. That's what we fight for.
If we die, we go to heaven?
No heaven or hell for us. This world is all we've got.
Sorry. Falling apart fast.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's insane. That's the point. I mean, that's why we laugh and make fun and are sarcastic and joke and do all kinds of shit. Because, you know, if we just stay right on the facts, it'd be so damn gloomy we'd scare everybody to death. You know? And you wonder, where does it end? I don't know. It's either going to win with Trump and America winning, or it's going to end with you're screwed. Back to you.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
That's true. It is the greatest trick he ever pulled. Because most of you listening probably don't think that the devil actually exists, including many of you so-called Christians. Now, here's the interesting thing. Atheism is a lot like your politics. Go with me for this for a second. I've just been thinking about this. Atheism is a theological proposition that is based on a negation of fact. That's what it is. You can't deny it. Atheists can't even deny this. Yes, it's a theological proposition because you're talking about the metaphysical state of the universe, which by definition has something to do with extra-universal
knowledge, and therefore you can't prove it scientifically. So it's a belief. And it is a belief in a negation. It is based on saying God does not exist. It has no positive proposition. Now, some atheists will tell you, well,
it's proven the negative, depend on the negative.
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's not that we're saying that God doesn't exist. It's that we believe in the efficacy of man. Well, what the fuck does that mean? I mean, if you believe in the efficacy of man, then you're fucked, because man has, you know, pretty shitty efficacy. Look at the last century with the hundreds of millions killed. Under atheist regimes, by the way. So that's the negation of an ontological fact, God, okay? We're not talking about who he is or anything, just that he exists. That's atheism. On the other side, you have either the God state, right? It's a lot like what Germany was. You know, they were pagans. And then the cult, you know, belief in the Nazi system. And it's totalitarian, meaning that it's everything is organized under that authority, right down to sex crime, thought crime, pre-crime, all that stuff. The other spectrum, you go with anarchy, which is a lot like atheism. It is anti-government. It is the absence of government. Now, this is coming from somebody in ANCAP, and my politics, I would say, in an ideal world, would be quite anarchic. Meaning if you have a few national fascistic enumerated powers in a federated system, the closer you get down to the local and the family unit, the more anarchic it is. Of course, in a family, it would be completely Marxist. Yes, it would be. Because it's from each according to his ability to each according to his needs. That's how families work. But that doesn't work when you take it out of the family. Family units are a little different. But when you take that out of the family, you paternalize government and you infantilize society. It's a pretty genius system. So anarchy is the negation of government, and atheism is the negation of God. The problem with negating something that exists and that must exist is that you create a vacuum. And that vacuum is going to be filled.
Chaos! So,
chaos convergence. So if you push atheism, which is what the devil has been doing for quite a long time, then you eliminate belief in God. And on a Marxist model, you demoralize a culture. You unmoralize a culture. Without the presence of God, there's no such thing as objective morality. It becomes consensus democratic morality or
relative
power politics.
Yeah. Relative.
Or the will to power. Yeah, the will to power. So by creating atheism, God is taken out of the picture. Now, God has given you a free will, so if you ask him to leave, he's going to leave. But then there's a vacuum created, and you still have a religious impulse. Everyone of you knows.
But don't we have the rule
Christian.
Of law, Rex? That's what the Republicans say.
That's because they're Republicans. So when you create that void, it's going to be filled with something. You still have the religious impulse, so you're going to want to worship something. In fact, culture comes from the word cult. Cult is that which you worship. So you're going to worship something. It could be sex. It could be money. It could be the state. It could be whatever. But the fact is that ultimately it's going to be a transcendent belief. The devil knows this because his fundamental ethos, right, is that he rebelled against God. He was the first rebel, the first revolutionary.
Follow Linsky's opening paragraph.
Yep, dedicated his book to him. By rebelling against God, he eliminated any connection with life and love. So his existence becomes hatred and rage. And what he desires more than anything else is to one-up God. But he's intelligent, and remember, with preternatural creatures, they don't learn, they know. Their knowledge is infused. They don't have to learn through sensory input like we do. He knows he can't. So the next best thing is that he wants to be worshipped by God's children, by you. By creating a vacuum of atheism, he opens up the world for a one-world religion of worshipping him. And in order to bring this about, he has to take over the church, which
conspiracy.
Likely began...
Oh, wait. It's in a book.
it is a conspiracy, but that takeover of the church likely began very effectively in the late 19th century. That's why we have the no longer used by the Catholic Church prayer to St. Michael. And if you don't know it, learn it. We played it on the show before. I've recited it many times. You should do it every day. St. Michael is the first counter-revolutionary. When Lucifer said, "I will not serve, non servium," St. Michael said, "Quis ut Deus, who is like unto God?" And then he flung the devil and a third of his demons, who were angels at the time, out of heaven. He was the first counter-revolutionary. You need to be a counter-revolutionary because we live in a Trotskyite Marxist revolutionary world. And so, politically speaking, they have to take over the church and then they have to take over the government. The best way to take over the governments is to promote anarchic systems under the pretext of self-determination and democracy. Because when you create that void, you create chaos, and then you get a convergence of totalitarian government, and the slaves will beg for it because they need some kind of order, and because of the chaos that was created, they will ask for a totalitarian system simply to take the pain away. I just summed up the basis of the New World Order.